Hello, welcome. I'm John Burns, and this is my podcast for all the folk who like the outdoors in Scotland. It's called, surprisingly enough, Outdoors in Scotland, which I think sort of covers it really, doesn't it? It's the middle of April here in the Highlands, and to be quite honest, it feels more like December, and we've had a pretty grim few months. And to be quite honest, I think the most best thing to do with mountains at the moment is to read about them. I'm hoping it'll pick up in May. You never know. So my guest today is a best-selling author, and he's written about the mountains and about people's experience and in exploring them. And he's a new book coming out, which I thought would be really great to talk to him about. So my guest today is John McLellan. Hello, John. How are you?
Good morning. I'm all right. Thanks very much, John. Thanks for inviting me on.
Oh, yeah. Very, very welcome. Now, your first book, The Fault Line, has done incredibly well. So I just wondered how has that gone for you? Has it been an interesting experience?
It's been, you know yourself, when you enter into the book writing and publishing world, it's a whole new thing. But it's been a journey the last 18 months or so, but one that I never predicted, but I've really enjoyed it as well, John. The book, as you say, The Fault Line, has been picked up by large numbers of people, particularly in the north of Scotland, through Ullapool Bookshop mainly, although it is available to all bookshops in Scotland and indeed beyond. But a lot of local regional people and an awful lot of visitors have been picking it up, and that's just been unexpected and really lovely. So yeah, the numbers keep on going.
Sounds great. I mean, there's a lovely little bookshop in Ullapool, and I'm hearing you sold 1,500 copies there alone. That's quite an achievement, I think. Really,
they tell me that's outstrips any other book they've ever had, and given that includes some proper authors and some very prestigious writers, I'm absolutely astonished, blown away, to be honest, is the truthful statement. And how we pass those milestones is incredible.
Yeah. So for people who've not read it, what was the Fault Line about?
Yeah, briefly, the Fault Line was set in the late 70s in Kinloch U, which many of your listeners will know, a lovely place in the Torridon Mountains. Kinloch U Village was also very attractive back in the late 70s. And my story is about a group of young people who rock up there for the summer for various reasons. Some are there to study the rocks, some are there to work on the campsite, but they all become interested in each other one way or another. And the story really explores love, affection and friendship against the backdrop or the ever-present backdrop of the amazing mountains around there.
Geology and the rocks are obviously you actually are a geologist to start with, is that right?
Yeah, I started off as a geologist, John, and I've stayed interested and involved with the subject to some degree for all my life. And I volunteer now. I'm retired as a sort of guide on the Jurassic Coast down in south, and I've helped out with the Northwest Highlands Geopark in a small way too. Yeah, I really, the rocks in Northwest Scotland, as we've talked about before, John, are incredible and unique in the world, both for what they actually are and the part they've played in the history of the subject of geology. So geology students find their way to the Northwest Highlands from all over Britain, and indeed from many other countries as well, because of the fantastic nature and the particular way that the rocks have formed there is, as I say, is quite unique.
Well, what in what way is it unique? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I suppose what the thing was back in the late 19th century. This is a short version. The science of geology was just getting going, John, and people were trying to figure it out. And it was largely being figured out in the UK because just in the small space of the British Isles, we have almost the entire global range of geology in such a small location. There's nowhere else quite like that, and it was fortuitous that that lined up with the Industrial Revolution and all those sort of things. By the time the early geologists had mapped and the early geological survey had mapped the rest of Britain, they ended up in the Northwest Highlands, partly because it was the most remote and partly because it was very difficult to get around. Right. And for them, it also turned out to be the most complicated section of geology in the UK as well. And they just couldn't figure out why the rocks looked the way they did.
Right.
And when they did eventually work it out, which took a couple of decades, what it meant was that that revealed really the extent of the Earth's history, the fact that mountain ranges had existed in the deep past and been eroded down to the sea and risen up again many times. And that right. cycle of mountain building through geological time was an absolute revelation back then and transformed the way people looked at the Earth. And it was all down to what occurred in the Northwest Highlands in the 1890s.
So it really sounds like a bit of a paradise for geologists. Is that fair to say?
It is a paradise. Yeah, well, you've got the rain and the midges as well.
Well, yeah. We don't talk about those.
And now the ticks. That's the thing, really. Back in the 70s, you did have to worry about the rain, and then the midges were a ever-present problem. But on those damp, dreaky days. But the ticks didn't really exist back then, or weren't a problem anyway. But yeah, it is a wonderful place to, and obviously the experience of being there, which I actually did in the late 70s, has stayed with me forever, and really informed the way that I wrote the fault line.
So your next book, your new book, which came out in April, well, it's still April, isn't it? Only a few days ago, in fact, it's called Unconformity. So, in some ways, it follows on from your previous book, but it's an independent book in itself. Tell us about Unconformity then.
Oh, you're very kind. As some of your listeners will immediately twig, the fault line and unconformity are geological terms. I mean, we use them in daily life, right? Well, the fault line is very often used in the news. You know, there's a fault line running through politics or whatever, fault line running through a particular political party or, ways.
Tell us about the fault line in relation to Scotland. I mean, obviously, there's a particular fault line you talk about, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a number of them. Now, I suppose that's one of the themes about the books is that geological time ticks away over billions and millions of years, and our own lifetimes tick away so quickly. The brevity of human life against the geological background is one of the things I suppose I explore. The fault line in the book called The Fault Line is I use it as a metaphor. There is a small one on the mountains there. But the great big run runs right down from Loch Arable in the far north down right. past the Isle of Skye beyond, called the Moyne Thrust. We don't need to go technical, but that name will mean something to some of your listeners. So you get faults on a different scale. But in the Fault Line novel, I used that term as a metaphor for something that was about one of the characters trying to come to terms with who he was and what his life was. And book two, unconformity, another geological term. Just briefly, I suppose, an unconformity is a break in geological sequence. A lot of people listening to this will be familiar when they walk around the mountains or go to see the cliffs on many of the coasts around the UK, that there are layers of rocks, yeah?
Yes.
You sort of see the cliffs and the mountains look as if they're built up of layers of rock. Yes. And those layers of rock are called strata. But where sometimes because of geological movements over time and erosion, there's a break in sequence. So instead of the layers in the past steadily building up on each other, there's a break for some reason. Something's gone, something's happened, so that the rocks above the unconformity are not the same as the rocks below. And that break-in sequence, an unconformity, is another term that I use as another metaphor in book two to explore some young people coming to terms with their lives again.
So I guess...
So I use the two terms...
So, sorry, yeah, the unconformity then, for someone who's completely ignorant about geology, is an unexpected change. Is that kind of one way of describing it?
Yeah, I suppose so. It's a break in sequence, so that what comes later geologically is doesn't really conform with what went before. So we were, if we were exploring a sequence of rocks, we'd sort of think everything was obvious here. It was all being laid down in an ocean steadily over millions of years. And then something happened so that after that, the rocks that we're now looking at are different in some way. We see them differently. So it's those sort of ideas that I explore here.
So obviously, for you as a geologist and someone who's interested in the mountains and the hills and wild places, but you see a parallel, as far as I can gather, between the characters' lives in unconformity and the geological environment around them. Tell us a little bit about that. I'd be interested in that.
In book two, Unconformity, it is a standalone book from the fault line, so people don't have to have read the fault line to hopefully read and appreciate Unconformity. It is written so that people can just pick it up and they don't have to have read the fault line. Yeah. But if people have read the fault line, then there is a continuity of some of the characters across from one novel to another. But basically, Unconformity picks up in the mid-80s, John, a time that will be familiar to many of your podcast listeners and folk out there, or will be familiar to their parents. And it was a time. So the Unconformity is a book that looks at a group of young people when life is in full flow. And for this group, like you and me, and other people on listening in, these are people who like being in the mountains. So Unconformity starts in the French Alps. It's written in four sections, really.
Right.
The first section is in the French Alps in Chamonix. You probably must have been there, John.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, of course. And fantastic place to go climbing and walking. And then the next three sections move to Northwest Highlands. And we start off book section two, commences around Loch Erebor, up on the north coast. And then section two moves us down to around Loch Inver, and we go walking on Sulven and Cunag, or the characters do, although it's not, the novel isn't just about walking, but mountain walking is really important to the characters, so they do it. And then the last section of the book takes all the characters back to Kinlochhue, and we on Ben A in particular, which is a fab mountain, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I use these locations. People are clearly enjoying the experience of being in them, like many of the readers and many of your listeners do, but also there's other things going on in their lives constantly, and particularly, again, this is about friendship, affection and love, and the twists and turns around that, and attraction to different people, against, as I've said before, this ever-present background of the gorgeous mountains that we love so much.
And do you think that it might inspire some people who perhaps otherwise wouldn't have gone to see some of these hills?
I'd hope so. Well, that's a nice thought. All I can say is, John, I've had you kindly referred to the sales of the book over in Ullapool Bookshop. The most extraordinary thing I've had is the feedback. You must get this too with what you've published, I guess. But people write to you, and as a writer, a new writer, as a novice initially, and now starting to feel a little bit more into it, 3 years on, I'm on a journey that hasn't stopped. But when you get an email or somebody says something really nice on Twitter or on Facebook or something, or Instagram, and contacts you and says something about the story and how its impact on them, that it made them feel something, and lots of people have also commented on how, for instance, visitors have picked up the book and said, I got your book back home, and it just transported me back to those mountains, which I really love. You know, when you can't make up what people actually say. It knocks me out when people have written to me like that, John, from America, Greece, France, yeah. Spain, all in English, fortunately.
As an author, so, I suppose, particularly about the outdoors, it's always great to hear from people. And, you know, well, writing by definition is a pretty solitary pursuit. You know, you're staring at a screen. And like you say, I get a lot of folk get in touch with me through the wonder of the internet these days, and tell me they've had their maps out, looking at where I've been, and they're inspired to put their boots on. So on all that is very rewarding, you know.
That one, quite a lot of people have said exactly what you just alluded to or mentioned there, which is that people have followed the characters' stories on the map. And I think, thank God I've written it accurately, you know. So my writing experience, it wasn't always possible to go back out on every mountain. But when I was writing, like last winter, for instance, and during this, the last 12 months or so, book two, you know, I'd have the laptop there, but I'd be surrounded by books and maps, you know, and I would check it, because you can't just rely on your memory, can you? So when if you're describing a walk up Ben Loyal, for instance, I'm sure a mountain that you know and love as well, right up on the north coast there.
I've been there many times.
Have you? Well, so it's a very special place to be. So, and I hadn't been there for some years. So I was looking back on notes. I had some friends have lent me journals that they've kept, so that, again, that helps the accuracy.
Yeah.
And it's just important that you do it in that way, because I didn't realise that people would read a book and being enthusiastic enough to actually get the map out and follow what people are doing at the same time is amazing and lovely, you know.
This is book two. I have the sense that book three is rattling around there somewhere.
You know how it is, don't you? I mean, book one, like we talked about before, 15 months ago or whenever it was, John, I'd had it looking in my head for many years, and then lockdown managed to provide the spur and the time to get it out. Book two was much harder. I'm sure you found the same thing. I was given a talk in Ullapool, funny enough, last week, and some aspirant writers were there, and they were asking me about the writing experience. And I said, writing book two is much harder than book one. And I gather that is the experience of pretty well all authors out there. But it hasn't deterred me. No, there is there's a book three in there for sure. I'm just trying to
Do you think you will follow the same, you know, the story of the same characters, and will you again set it in the mountains, or will you travel further afield? What do you think?
Well, I think you've said that you know Chamonix and love it. I mean, back in the 80s, Chamonix in the French Alps was a real place for Brits to hang out and turn up.
It was,
And we did in large quantities, you know, and people could just meet up there in the street, you know, which is something I describe in the book. Just the chance encounter with somebody you haven't seen for a few years, because you're all there doing some climbing, you know. I would stick to largely to Scotland, though. I think book three probably takes me into the trickier area of life, maybe for people like you, now that because the first two books are really about how it is when you're coming of age and you're a young person trying to make sense of the world. I think there's also a story in there when you're at the other end and you're in your 60s and you're trying to make sense of the world. And still trying maybe to make sense of love and affection and friendship. Those things, that you thought you'd have sorted out through your life maybe haven't had such an easy
I've never managed it myself, to be honest. I've never made sense of much. I'm more bewildered now than I was when I set off, really.
Well, that's perfect. That's perfect, John.
Yeah. You're looking really, so it sounds as though you're the, I suppose there are transitions all the way through life, aren't there? And I think there are parallels in some ways between, I think, youth and you know, when both you and I are retired and suddenly you've got the time that you didn't have before to pursue other things. And it does put you in a very different place, do you think?
Absolutely. You know, And I'm better off now than I was when I was an impoverished student. You know, you start off with nothing, don't you? And then, or I did, and then you find that you're in retirement and you have got the luxury of choices. But how do you use your time? And there's also that other thing, John, that you can see, unfortunately, when you look to the horizon, you can see the buffers getting closer and closer towards you.
Advancing with remarkable rapidity at this point, I have to say, yes.
Yeah, so I think there's a story to explore in there, which is, what I'm looking at in the two novels that you've asked me about is young people trying to sort themselves out against the backdrop of amazing mountains, which they love, but they're really trying to sort out the human relationships. But that sort of thing is still going on. As you've just said, you know, in later life, a lot of people I know still haven't got things cracked. You know, you've got this chance to do whatever you want because you've only got maybe not so many years left. You know, how are you going to use the time that you're given?
Is
the thing to explore, I think.
I suppose it's just as different. You're facing challenges all through life. And I think even as you get older, those challenges just change a little bit. You never escape those. So your book is available principally from Ullapool Bookshop, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's on BookSource, which you probably know of, which is the sort of wholesale platform, John. So theoretically,
any bookshop can get it.
I'm pleased to say a Scottish publisher, I can't say who on here, has approached me now and are wanting seemingly to take me on, which is great. Yeah. The easiest, Ullapool Bookshop have got a sort of trading platform. It's very easy to use wherever you are in the UK or the world, and they will happily dispatch a copy to you.
Well, that sounds fantastic, and I'll look forward to reading your third book as well. Whenever that comes out, it might enlighten me into some of the issues that I'm dealing with myself. It's been lovely talking to you, John. Thank you very much, and I wish you all the very best with your books, and I'm sure they'll be really successful. They sound like a great read, particularly for people who have an affinity with the Highlands and the mountains. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for inviting me on again, John. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Great talking to you. And you have to come on again when book three gets out.
Okay, that'll be great.
Thanks, John.
Right. Bye. Thanks a lot. Take care. Cheers now. Bye.